had declared that they would intercept any vessel known to be carrying Kaweah, shooting it down if arrest was not an option. If less had been at stake, the Ultras might have ignored that kind of threat, but now they had made their presence officially known and were engaged in sensitive trade negotiations with those self-same factions. Kaweah was effectively confined to the surface, and a steadily diminishing area of it at that. But Orcagna had stayed true to his word. He was still feeding us information on Ryvich's position as he moved south towards the reptile house, at the fuzzy accuracy which Kaweah had requested. Our plan was simple enough. There were very few routes through the jungle north of the reptile house, and Ryvich had already committed himself to one of the major trails. There was a point on the trail where the jungle had encroached badly, and it was there that we would lay our ambush. "We'll make an expedition of it," Kaweah had said, as he and I pored over a map table in the basement of the reptile house. "That's prime Hamadryad country, Tanner. We've never been there before, never had the opportunity. Now Ryvich is giving it to us on a plate."
"You've already got a Hamadryad."
"A juvie." He said it contemptuously, as if the animal were almost not worth having. I had to smile, remembering how triumphant he'd been at its capture. To capture any size of Hamadryad alive was quite an achievement, but now he had set his sights higher. He was the classic hunter, incapable of being sated. There was always a bigger kill out there to taunt him, and he always deluded himself that after that one there would be yet another, as yet undreamt of. He stabbed the map again. "I want an adult, a near adult, I should say." "No one's ever caught a near adult Hamadryad alive."
"Then I'll have to be the first, won't I?"
"Leave it," I said. "We've enough of a hunt on our hands with Ryvich. We can always use this trip to scope the terrain and go back in a few months with a full hunting expedition. We don't even have a vehicle that could carry a dead near adult, let alone a live one."
"I've been thinking about it," he said, "and doing some preliminary work on the problem. Come on, let me show you something, Tanner."
I had a horrible sinking feeling. We walked through connecting corridors into another part of the reptile house's basement levels. Down in the basement vivaria, there were hundreds of large display cases, equipped with humidifiers and temperature control for the comfort of reptilian guests. Most of the creatures that would have filled these exhibits moved in conditions of low light, along the forest floor. The cases would have held realistic habitats for them, stocked with exactly the right kinds of flora. The largest was a series of stepped rock pools, into which a pair of boa constrictors would have been introduced, but the embryos had been damaged years earlier. By any strict definition, there were no creatures on Sky's Edge that were exactly reptilian. Reptiles, even on Earth, were only one possible evolutionary outcome from a vast range of possibilities. The largest invertebrates on Earth had been squid, but on Sky's Edge, invertebrate forms had invaded land as well. No one really knew why life had gone down this road, but the best guess was that some catastrophic event had made the ocean shrink to perhaps half their previous area, exposing vast new areas of dry ground. Life on the ocean fringes had been given a huge incentive to adapt to land. The backbone had just never been invented, and through slow, fumbling, mindless ingenuity, evolution had managed to do without it. Life on Sky's Edge was genuinely spineless. The largest animals, the Hamadryads, maintained structural rigidity through the pressure of circulatory fluids alone, pumped by hundreds of hearts spread throughout the creature's volume. But they were cold-blooded, regulating their body temperatures by their surroundings.